Hi, my name is Ben Ingebretsen, and welcome to this ongoing training on raising funds and developing stewards for a new church start. We're talking and building upon some foundational biblical understandings that that guide the whole stewardship development process. That God owns it all, therefore there's no shortage of funds, only a shortage of stewards. That people manage and are not the owners. And so every decision you and I make is a stewardship decision. And that stewardship is a learned behavior. That it doesn't come naturally, but it's something that as ministry leaders we have to grow others in. Those are fairly simple ideas, and yet they're radical when you begin to think about the work that you and I do in leading a ministry. In fact, we say that stewardship development is not something we do in order that we can plant a church. Stewardship development is church planting. It's part of it. Growing stewards and growing funds are all part of the process of raising up disciples wherever Christ gives us that opportunity. So we've talked about, up to this point, a couple of strategic next steps in developing and raising up resources for your new church start. We've talked about the importance of strategic planning, that people give to the future, not to the past. And having a strategic plan, a vision for the future, is key in that regard. And we've talked about effective communication and how to communicate well your vision. We've talked about change and change development and change the change process. Now, in this session, we're going to talk about organizational worthiness. And then finally, we're going to talk about some elements of practical stewardship development and fund development in your ministry. So we've got a lot of ground to cover. Jump in with me. First of all, we're talking today about earning the right to receive. And again, organizational worthiness. Just because you have a strategic plan, just because you communicate it well, just because you pay attention to the dynamics of change and the emotions around change, doesn't necessarily mean that people are going to give when you ask. You have to earn the right to receive. So let's talk about that. It's all about trust. People will give to your ministry because they trust you. They trust that you're accountable to a board. They trust your ability as a leader. They trust your character as a leader. And so let's talk first of all about that issue of being accountable to a board or an oversight team. I hope that your ministry has a board, an oversight body. During the early phases of a church plant, that's usually external to the church plant. That is to say, it's a group of folks who are not necessarily worshiping with you every week. They may be area pastors. They may be denominational leaders. They're people that will care deeply about your plant and hold you accountable for the development of that as an oversight presence. They protect and promote your ministry vision. They ensure the financial health of the ministry by paying attention to the integrity of that financial health responsibility. But then they hold you accountable for integrity and progress. You see, people will give to your ministry because they know you're accountable to someone. If you're accountable to no one, they're going to wonder about who supervises you so that you are a trustworthy leader. And so you build trust whenever you demonstrate accountability to a board. Secondly, when you lead your ministry team, you build trust when people see that you are a person that is leading a team. When you're not a lone ranger, when you're not trying to do it all yourself, but whenever they see that you're developing leaders, whenever you're holding them to SMART goals and holding them accountable for their leadership, when you're raising up others and sharing responsibility, when you're coaching them in that responsibility, when you're meeting with them and building them as a sense of team together. You see, when you lead a ministry team and people see that you are a team player, albeit the leader of the team, they'll grow in their trust for you. They'll see that you work successfully with others. They'll see that others like to follow you and like to be a part of your team. And that inspires trust on the part of outsiders and anyone else observing your work. And finally, leading your personal life. You see, people want to know that you have personal disciplines, you have a weekly schedule, that you have your own SMART goals, that you're accountable to that process of personal growth. The toughest person sometimes to lead is yourself. And we lead ourselves whenever we commit ourselves to structures and to processes and to personal discipline and to preparation and to goals and to oversight. Kind of like the rock climber there, it took him a lot of work to develop his strength and a lot of self-discipline to develop his strength. And similarly, it takes a lot of self-discipline to lead a ministry. And people want to know that you have that self-discipline. SMART goals, we've referenced that a couple times now. SMART goals are specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and timely. They're specific that you have SMART goals, and that we referenced that earlier, that others on your team have SMART goals and that you're able to lead them in their SMART goals, but that you're allowing yourself to be coached and led in the development of your SMART goals as a leader. Again, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, relevant, and timed. So are you a part of a pastor's network? Are you continually growing in your professional development? Are you getting feedback from others? Earning the right to receive a dollar, a gift, a few coins, comes because people see that you're accountable to someone over you. It comes because they see that you're able to develop a team. It comes because you show evidence of leading your own personal life. It's all about trust. It's all about building trust. Those three areas are all about building trust. Everything depends, so much depends on trust, doesn't it? 10 ways to build trust. Here's a few summary thoughts. First of all, communicate and be transparent. Let your donors know what's going on in the ministry. Communicate regularly, ideally once a month. Let them know what's happening. Be transparent. Don't be a person who's known for keeping secrets, at least keeping secrets about the general health and direction of the ministry. Secondly, tell the truth. Always be honest with people about the ministry. You can't build trust without it. Right wrongs. You and I make mistakes. We always do. Be the first one to try to right the wrong, correct things when you can. Demonstrate loyalty. You want people to be loyal to you. You be loyal to them. Face reality. When things are tough, be honest enough to face it for what it is. Be accountable. Be willing to be under someone. I talked with a church planter recently who said, "I'm not accountable to anyone." That's not good. Don't be that way. Be willing to be accountable. You build trust that way. And trust is the currency for so much ministry. Keep your commitments. When you say you're going to do something, do it. Be reliable. Listen. Be willing to be quiet and listen and receive input and feedback. Show respect. You want to be given it be the first one to show it. And always be getting better. Always be working on improving. When people observe that their pastor, that their leader is working at getting better, that only builds more trust, not less. It's all about trust and earning the right to receive. You must build trust with those that you want to grow as givers towards your ministry. You may be able to grow them as givers to another ministry, but if you want them to give towards your ministry, you must build the trust, the right to receive. And that's what this building block is all about. Now let's go to the fourth building block, and that's skills and methods. And I'll be the first one to say that this is a challenging area because there's a lot of material here. There's a lot I'd like to cover with you, and some of it's a bit technical. So strap in, hang on, and here we go. Raising external startup funds. What do I mean by that? Your ministry will likely need some resources along the way to be all that it potentially could be. There'll come a time whenever the availability of those resources will come from within the attenders and those that are part of your ministry. But during the beginnings, before there's a launch, you'll probably need some resources, and those resources will need to come either from yourself or from others who care about this ministry and who want to support it. Now, I think it's a good thing whenever a bivocational leader says that they're willing to, out of their own resources, fund their ministry. But I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's necessary because Paul didn't think it's necessary. He said a laborer is worthy of their hire. And he also said, and we also know that churches have over the years been helping other churches get started. And so it's not a bad thing to seek some external funding to help start your ministry, your church plant. Now, having said that, it's not a good thing, as we talked about earlier, it's not a good thing for there to be a long-term dependency relationship with your church plant. It's not a good thing for 3, 4, 5 years or more beyond the launch of your church plant for you to continually need money or resources from people who are not participating directly in your church. You want to grow those people up over that period of time. And you should be able to grow them up over those initial years. But the startup will require oftentimes some additional funds. And so how much will you need? The goal is to be self-sustaining. But how much will you need in order to get there? And where will it come from? The more diverse the sources that it comes from, the better, the more stable. But you ought to have a healthy biblical understanding by now that asking other people to give to your ministry is a biblical mandate that Paul charged Timothy to command those who had resources to be generous. And so don't shrink back, don't be afraid to ask others to give. But if it's done well and if it's done properly, you can do that with the confidence that you are growing stewardship and generosity in the hearts and lives of others. So how will you grow individual external donors? Individuals who are not participating in your ministry. They're external to your ministry, but they want to support it. So what I'd like to share with you are a number of steps that can help you think this through. Now, I'm going to use terms and I'm going to use financial figures that are from North America. They probably won't apply to your situation perfectly. they don't even apply perfectly to every situation in North America. So you're going to need to just understand the principles that are behind this. And that's what I'd like to emphasize, is the principle, not the exact financial numbers. So let's first of all calculate how much will your church plant need from external support. First, how many people with a job do you believe you can realistically enfold into your church plant in 3 to 4 years? How many people with a job do you believe you can realistically enfold into your church plant in 3 to 4 years? I have a couple of assumptions in that sentence. The first is that in 3 to 4 years, your church plant will probably reach a point of plateau. It can grow beyond that, and we trust that it will. But it will reach its first plateau, its first level of influence and size and participation. So, the second assumption is I'd like to know how many you can realistically enfold, how many people you can realistically enfold. And when I say realistically enfold, I mean people that will become involved in that ministry and begin to give. Now, we understand that they're going to give maybe just a few shekels the first Sunday, the first year. During those Sundays of the first year, that's right, during the Sundays of the first year, they'll probably just give a few shekels every day, every Sunday. In the second year, they'll give a few more shekels on the Sundays when they attend. And hopefully on that third or fourth year, they'll give yet even a few more. And they'll grow to their potential as givers. We talked about that earlier. They'll move from fear and guilt to generosity and joy and worship in the way they think about their giving. So we recognize that they're going to grow over time. And the question then is, how many people with a job like that do you think you can involve that way? This is a hard question to answer if you've never planted a church before. It's a difficult question to answer. It makes it hard to project if you can't come up with some kind of a basic idea. So oftentimes I'll tell people to guess a little lower than you might hope, because we sometimes hope we'll have a great many people, and maybe we'll come in a little less than that. But the question is, how many people with a job? And the reason I say how many people with a job is because each person who has earning potential has giving potential. And so imagine that you can think about a certain number that way. One of the numbers that we like to use in North America is 100. 100 people with a job. Now, that may or may not be realistic. We have many church plants that have less than 100 people in them with a job after 3 to 4 years. We have many others that have many more than 100 people in them after 3 to 4 years. So every situation is different. But if you multiply this number of people that you feel you can gather by a certain amount, which would be their average monthly giving, and then multiply that number by 12 months of the year, you can come up with what the annual projected giving would be. Now, in North America, we know generally what that number is. And the number is somewhere early on of a person of about 1% of their annual giving, their annual earning, and then 2% of their annual earning, and then 3% of their annual earning. And unfortunately for most people, on average, who attend church in North America, they give at or around 3% of their annual income. So the way that works out for us in North America gives us a number that we say that's, if we divide that annual amount of giving by 12, we can come up with what the monthly giving would be. Or if we take that monthly amount and multiply it by 12, we can come up with the annual projected giving of the individual with a job that's employed. And then if you graduate or if you grow your internal giving upwards each year, a little more, as you grow people in the grace of giving, and you also grow the number of people attending your church, as they're growing in this generosity journey, as you grow them upwards, then you decline or decrease the external giving that may be coming in from supportive partners that are wanting to help you launch your church. Remember, it's never good to have external funding coming in over the long, long haul. It's not good. It creates external dependency. That dependency will reduce the leadership and the commitment and the dignity associated with the responsibility you have of launching a new church. You don't want that. You raise the dignity and you raise the leadership and you raise the responsibility as people begin to take responsibility for the ministry through their giving, through their tithes, and through their offerings. So graduate your internal giving upwards and then release and reduce the outside funding that's coming into your ministry. You may have people who want to support you long term from the outside. I would be very careful about that. It may very well not be for your good or for the good of your people. They will learn that they don't have to grow in the grace of giving, and they will learn to be dependent, and they will learn not to take the courageous steps of discipleship that Jesus calls them to do. So give some careful thought of how you're going to increase your internal giving as you plan and reduce your external giving or external income. Here's an example of that. If you imagine the total projected employed people in North America at 75 people, you could project, based on their giving of about 3% of most employed people, that you would have a total monthly income of about $9,000, or the potential budget of a church of about $108,000. Now, that may sound like a terribly great amount of money to you, or a very little amount of money to you. I don't know. The expenses in North America may be considerably greater than the expenses in your situation, or considerably less. But that's essentially what the giving potential is of those 75 people with a job. Now, if you think about that annual projected giving, you build a budget, and in year number one, you say, well, we could probably internally see our small group of attenders generate about $10,000 worth of income. And year number two, we'd like to see that grow to $40,000 worth of income as the group grows in size and grows in their maturity as givers. And year number three to $80,000, and year number four to $100,000. Now, if you notice, year number four at $100,000 in terms of the internal giving means that we're very, very close to that $108,000 projected total annual internal giving. That means at year number four, we've got 75 people in attendance with a job employed that are able to give. So that means that year number three, we have a little less than 75. Year number two, we have yet a little less than that. And year number one, maybe we only have 20. But there's a potential way of thinking about the growth of internal giving as you mature that over time. Now again, your numbers are going to be very different because your setting is probably different than the setting in North America. That's just fine. Every situation is different. The key is that you want to begin to project based on the number of people that attend what your potential giving could be. That helps you project the amount of external support that you might go looking for. Because in the first year, you might need as much as $99,000 to reach that $108,000 budget, if that's what you project as being your budget for the first year. Now, if this church planter in North America were bivocational, their giving could be considerably less. The external giving could be considerably less than $99,000. But if the ministry leader, the pastor, wants to be full-time working in the ministry, wants to be full-time doing evangelism and discipleship, full-time developing leaders and working on the church plant, they're going to need the resources for their salary and for the rental of the space and for the utilities and for all the other expenses associated with the ministry. And so that's how much money they might need to raise, $99,000, from outside sources. Year number two, as they've grown the number of internal givers, they're going to need less from their outside sources. Year number three, yet even less from outside givers. Year number four, still even less. They're moving towards self-sustainability. As a result, you can add up that bottom line of external givers, 99 plus 68 plus 28 plus 8, and say that what this new ministry needs to launch, if it's going to launch with a full-time leader who's working full-time in the ministry from the very beginning, is going to need about $203,000 in outside support. Now again, that might be a number quite higher than would be required in your situation where you're willing to be bivocational. Or it might be less, where less than is needed if your situation requires a great deal more resources. But it gives you an idea of this process and the support externally and internally in terms of building out a plan towards sustainability. Now, where can startup funds come from? Well, they can come from lots of places, kind of like slices of a pie. They can certainly come from tithes and offerings and personal fundraising. They can come from your bivocation, from parent church support, from partner church support, from regional friends in a denominational context, from micro-enterprising, from rummage sales, or from even foundations or government grants. But the reality is that most of us will raise startup funds, if we're looking to raise external funds, from a variety of sources. They'll come from a variety of places. But most of it will come before you have a congregation, before you have committed worshipers. Most of it's going to come through personal fundraising or bivocational income. That's where most of it will come. Now let's talk about growing individual external donors, that personal fundraising piece. Who do you know? One of the exercises I typically do with folks is ask them to sit down and say, write down the names of 100 people that you know. That usually makes people uncomfortable because they may feel like they don't know 100 people. But once they get going at it, they find out that they know many more than 100 people. Who do you know? Who do you know from your various circles of influence and experience over many, many years? Who do you know? And then how can you cultivate your relationship with them? You remember we talked a while back about the need to have comfort and discomfort in developing emotional change. And so forming and cultivating a relationship with something is all about comfort. It's all about reacquainting yourself with someone. It's sending them a note and saying, hey, I would like to share with you an exciting new chapter in my life. I have felt a call to plant a church, and by God's grace, I'm stepping forward to do it. You may not ask them for any gift at that point. You just want to cultivate the relationship. You just want to keep the relationship alive. Maybe you haven't spoken with them for a while. And maybe the next letter you send them would simply say that you're so excited about this new venture that God has for you, but that you'd like to begin to pray for them also as you ask them to pray for you. And so you begin to share prayer requests back and forth with these individuals that you know. Now, it's going to require on your part that you do some record keeping. Because when you begin to communicate to 100 or more people about the ministry future that God has for you, and when you begin to develop a relationship with them or cultivate that relationship, when you ask them for their prayer requests and you pray for them and theirs, and they pray for yours, it's going to require that you keep track a little bit and that you begin to pay attention to. It's going to require that you write things down, keep track, keep record, and begin to form a journal of prayer for those who one day may be your donors and your supporters. Form the relationship. Cultivate the relationship. And then, at the right time, make the request. You ask them first if they would pray for your ministry. And then you ask them if they would consider making a financial commitment, how they could fit into the ministry. You share with them that you've made a financial commitment to it and you're wondering if they would be willing to make a commitment to this journey of obedience that God has you on as you seek to plant a church. And you always recognize each gift. You say thank you. Not perhaps as faithfully done as it should be. So oftentimes we receive gifts and we don't go back and say thank you. But remember this, it's always easier to grow an existing giver than it is to find a brand new one. So for each dollar, each coin that's given, you say thank you. Thank you so much. And you continue to cultivate the relationship. And then you ask, who will tell your story? Who else could you tell your story to? Is there someone that they know that you could share this exciting new venture that you're under with, that you're undertaking, that you could share that with? And finally, you report what's done with the gifts that you've received. You tell people. You're transparent. You're open. You communicate. You let them know what you've done with the resources that they have shared with you. All that's about growing individual external donors. It's critical, each step. You're helping them grow in the grace of giving. You're growing them as stewards. Here's a few ideas in terms of a list of folks that you could approach. You probably can think of many, many more. Each should receive a written case statement, and we shared that earlier in a prior training lecture on how to develop that case statement that answers those seven questions. Why is this ministry needed? What is my credibility as a leader? What's the opportunity God has before us? What's the process? What's the plan? He'll give you an opportunity to share that with them in a written form and then contact them. Make sure that you connect with them face-to-face after you've communicated that written material with them. You may be surprised that your network of potential givers is much larger than you think. Qualify your donors. Each person who gives to your ministry is a person that you could potentially think about in terms of their likelihood of responding. For instance, if they have a strong relationship with you and have a strong connection with you, a strong, deep, trusting relationship, they're more likely to give. If they have great capacity to give, if they've been privileged and entrusted by God to steward a large portion of God's goods, then they may have the potential of giving more. And so they give more strategically. They're going to want to know what your plan is more, those who fit that category. If they have affinity to your mission, if they love church planting, they're more likely to give more. So as you think about working with your donors, work happily with anyone, for sure. Grow anyone in the grace of giving. But understand that some people need to be challenged at a greater level than others. They need to be challenged at a greater level because God always wants us to grow in the grace of giving. He always wants us to mature to a higher level. And their capacity to give may be greater than others. So work at qualifying, work at discerning what the right amount is to ask for. I recommend that you don't ask without having an amount in your mind. Some people recommend asking for the same amount of every donor, and that can be okay. Others say no, ask for a specific amount based on what you think that person is capable of giving. However you do it, my recommendation is that you have some amount in your mind and that you don't just ask for someone to give without having an amount in your mind that you share with them. One way of doing that is a donor matrix. A donor matrix says that I need 3, 5, 7, 10, 15, 20, 40 people to give certain amounts in order for me to raise the amount of money that it's going to take for me to launch this new ministry. And so here's a way of thinking about that donor matrix and asking someone, would they be willing to step in at the amount or the level that you challenge them to? Would you be willing to be a $1,000 giver? Would you be willing to be a $10,000 giver? You fill in the amounts based on what you think fits best for your setting. But it's always good to challenge a donor, maybe one step above what you might expect. You never dishonor a person by asking more of them. You honor them by challenging them. If you always remember that this is not about you raising funds for your ministry. This is not ultimately about you raising your salary or raising your income. This is about growing them in the grace of giving. This is about helping them take another step in their stewardship. Now, when you make the ask, make sure that you have a good relationship with the person and that you know them and what they're passionate about. Make sure that you plan to report back with stories, that there's fruitfulness in your ministry as you report back, that there's honesty, that you're able to share with passion and speak to their heart, that there's the possibility of them participating in the church plant, perhaps. Sometimes it's just enough to ask someone to pray about your church plant. Other times, they may be willing to participate in other ways. Challenge your donor with a specific ask. Do it in a way that's relationally warm, that's built upon trust, and that is a desire to grow them as a steward of what belongs to God. Acknowledge each gift. Update communication. Develop two-way relationships of prayer. Be mindful of their fiscal year with timely updates and requests. Some folks who may run a small business or who may have seasons of their year when their income is higher or lower, you'd be wise to pay attention to that. But always disclose your financial status with them during your ministry year audits. Always be fully open and transparent with them about your finances, and in so doing, continue to build trust. Now let's talk a little bit about developing internal givers. We've talked a lot about developing external givers. In developing internal givers, we shared this earlier, that that those steps, those emotional steps of growth and development, really are a graduation from those who are going to pay, those who are going to pay for an experience. They're going to give you a few coins because they feel like you've earned it. And that's a natural way for them to begin in their giving, because they don't yet fully understand that that giving is not about what you need. It's about what they need. It's about their need to grow as givers. It's not about your need as a ministry. It's about what God wants. And so to begin with, we accept the fact that that folks will give you a few coins, but we want to grow them. We want to grow them into those who give, who are generous, who recognize that they want to become mature in the grace of giving. And ultimately, those who endow, I think of those who endow as the ones who may leave behind at the end of their lives a gift for the ministry. So, three publics and their pockets. Your job, primarily in a new church start, is to grow payers into givers and grow everyone into the role of being a generous steward. And so we're back to this schematic that we've shared earlier. Now let's talk a little bit about the offering and communication. Many of your new church starts will want to take up an offering. And it's really important that you take advantage of that experience on Sundays when they gather, when you gather, and there's a desire to take up a collection for people to give their tithes and offerings. Sometimes congregations want to put a box in the back by the door and have people put their offerings in that box as they leave. Sometimes churches want to have a box in the front on the altar or on a table, and people will come forward and put their gifts into that offering container. Sometimes they'll want to pass a basket that people can put their offerings into. Regardless of how you do it, the important thing is that you talk about it. The important thing is that each Sunday you talk about it. You say something about people growing in the grace of giving. You give some biblical reference to it. You give some reminder that this is not about what the church needs, but it's about what God wants. You give some insight into the joy that's to be had with generosity. It really is less important the way you collect the offering, and it's more important that you talk about it each Sunday, that you share with your congregation what the needs are so that people can take that into consideration in terms of their giving, and that weekly stewardship lessons, those reminders each week, will help people bear in mind that this very important part of your worship is all about discipleship. It's about becoming more like Christ, who came to give. God is the great giver, and we learn to reflect His generosity through our giving. Another strategy is commitment cards. The 90-day stewardship test is a way of saying, for 90 days, what if you took a step and you began to give a percentage of your weekly income? for 90 days and would test God to see whether he would provide for you in spite of that generosity on your part. A 90-day stewardship test is a great way of doing that. An annual commitment to the ministry and saying, what would you be willing to commit to, God being your helper, this next year? We recognize that our lives are in his hands and that there may come a time during this next year whenever I can't work. We just don't know. But God being my helper, what are you willing to commit to the ministry over this next year? To always conclude a teaching series, if it's a teaching series on stewardship, with a request for people to make a commitment. And then increasingly in North America, there's the discussion and the use of direct deposit, where people can have removed from their bank accounts a certain amount each week or a certain amount each month. Capital campaigns is not something we're going to go into in great depth here, but capital campaigns are efforts to significantly advance your ministry through the purchase of land or the purchase of a building. And many times congregations need to raise a significant amount of money to do that. And so if that becomes at some point your challenge as your church plant grows and is significantly further down the road in terms of development and maturity, raising funds for a capital campaign is a great opportunity in ministry because people will give from resources for a long-term vision of a new building. They'll give perhaps to a greater extent than they would give for the week-by-week expenses of the ministry. Remember, people love to give to the future. People love to give to a vision. And a vision, a capital campaign, usually is about that kind of vision for the future. Teach on stewardship values and principles early in your church plant. Don't wait until you're desperate to talk about finances. We talk about stewardship and encourage people to talk about finances and growing as givers at the very beginning of a church plant, the very first Sunday when they take up the collection, to say one or two things about maturity in the grace of giving, about becoming full of the joy that comes from giving. In addition to having an annual teaching on stewardship, remember that stewardship education, as we've said several times in this training lecture, should occur weekly, even though it may be just ever so brief. John Wesley had a wonderful little way of talking about stewardship development. He said, earn all you can, save all you can, and give all you can. That was a sermon series for John Wesley, and he planted many, many churches. He trained his people to use their gifts to be industrious and to earn what they could as agents in God's world, committed to do the work that Adam was charged with, was to take charge of the creation and exercise dominion over it, but then to save all they can, to not put yourself in a position of a debtor, that debt is a hard thing and in most cases is not desirable. So to save all you can and then to give all you can, to be generous and to experience the joy of giving. Well, we've covered a lot of ground in this training, and there's a lot more that could be said. But let's just come back to this basic reminder. Stewardship development is not what we do so that we can do ministry. It's not a means to an end. It's not a necessary evil. It's not something that we have to apologize for or feel bashful about. Stewardship development is discipleship. Stewardship development is disciple making. Stewardship development is part of church planting. Stewardship development is ministry. God bless you as you're about that.